You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast for this Friday episode where we will talk about the NBA champion Indiana Pacers. Just kidding. They did beat the Golden State Warriors over the second time this season last night, and that is obviously what we're talking about because they're the Golden State Warriors, and they made the finals the last three seasons. Sorry, my computer just yelled at me. And we'll also talk about the Raptors game a bit tonight. It's a back-to-back in Toronto. I'm not super enthused by the Pacers' chances, but they did just beat the Warriors by 20, so maybe it's a moot point. But as always, I'm one of your hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast, Tony East with the West Indianapolis Community News. And I really enjoyed last night's game. The Pacers' biggest lead was 26. The Warriors' biggest lead was 5. The Pacers did not look back after taking the lead with about 9 minutes to go in the second quarter. And it was a shockingly dominant performance. I thought with this one, I always knew that Curry is the most impactful player on the Warriors. But I thought that with Kevin Durant being the best player on the court by not a little, a freaking lot, and Draymond Green being back and playing his excellent defense, I thought that there was just no way the Pacers were going to be able to contain this Warriors team. They were going to be able to get out in transition and do whatever they wanted. And I was super wrong about that. Kevin Durant was 8 of 23 from the field. And what's crazier about that is he was guarded by Bojan a lot of the time. They were on the court together. We'll talk about Bojan later because, oof, but he was awesome. But he couldn't score. He finished with 27, but 9 free throws, only 8 shots made from the field. 27 on 23 points is just an okay efficiency game. Speaking of okay efficiency games, Klay Thompson was 16 points on 16 shots, and he was killing it from 3. He was 4 of 9 from deep, but to understand the value of efficiency well here, 16 points on 16 shots because he did not get to the free throw line once because of some other good defense from Victor Oladipo. And that matchup was very interesting too. Caitlin Cooper tweeted about it. I think everybody saw it happen who watched the game. What a stones play from Victor Oladipo. He gets the ball about 10 on the shot clock with Klay Thompson on him, backs up, resets, surveys everybody, and then just blows by all NBA level defender Klay Thompson to the rim and scores. I mean, Oladipo is just so fast and athletic and has just proven time and time again that he is an elite scorer, and Klay Thompson just couldn't handle him at all in that possession. It was super impressive, and he did a good job on Klay himself on the other end, even though there was some mixing and matching going on with who was guarding who. One possession, Draymond was on Victor Oladipo, and I thought, oh man, this is going to not go well. And then it did go well, and then they never did it again. And I was kind of surprised by the Warriors' game plan in this game, but it is what it is. But I was just mostly, I think the takeaway is the Pacers' defense, because they were shutting down everybody. That's why I was sorting through some of the efficiencies. It was really wild to see, like, without Curry, Quinn Cook started at point guard. 12 points on 12 shots. You know, Draymond was really good. He didn't miss a shot from the field, and he was minus 16 because the starting lineup just couldn't get anything going. I mean, it was really a dominant performance by the Pacers from pretty much the start of the second quarter to the end of the game, and I could not be more impressed with that, with this game, because I mean, you heard me on the weekly pod. I maybe they had like a tiny chance, but I didn't think it was much. But they were just making everything. The starters were Bojan. It's time to talk about Bojan, who was getting free from everywhere. So the Warriors really do switch a lot. It's kind of their MO. They have a lot of like-sized guys in their starting five that allows them to do that. But Bojan, when he gets a sliver of freedom, he's pulling the trigger, or he's going for the rim, or you know, he's just smart about what he does when he gets switches. And in this game, he took full advantage. He couldn't miss from anywhere. He was 11 of 13, 6 of 7 from deep. He had 28 points. And Grant F. Seth tweeted this, which is funny. Bojan's season high is 29 points, which he did on February 5th and March 5th. And then last night, April 5th, he had 28. So apparently on the fifth day of the month, Bojan is just one of the best players ever. So hopefully the Pacers have a playoff game on May 5th where Bojan can play and lead the team to an easy victory, because you know he's just going to be scorching hot that day. Thaddeus Young was really good too. He was matched up with Draymond for much of the game, and he was really hitting the offensive glass, which I think was his big thing in this one. A rare matchup where Thad has a height advantage, and because of the effort he already gives and the type of player he is, that just led to easy offensive rebounds for him. 5 was the game high substantial, and the Pacers actually had 13 offensive rebounds, which for them is a really good number. So that was a good game from Thad. 7-11 from the field was nice as well. including missing two threes. But he was a plus 34 against Golden State. That's crazy. Thaddeus Young was so impactful all over the place. Five assists, no turnovers, two from him. And he was doing a good job. I remember this play pretty well in the fourth quarter. There was a pick and roll with Oladipo and Turner. And first, the Warriors double teamed the pick and roll with, I think, Jordan Bell was at center. So Jordan Bell and Klay Thompson doubled Victor Oladipo. And he actually, for once, kind of handled it right and pocket passed it right away to Miles Turner coming down the lane. And then Turner turned and faced, and Draymond Green came to help from the corner off of Thad Young. But right when Draymond took off to help Turner, crashing towards the rim, Thad Young did a perfect cut baseline towards the rim. Turner bounced past it to him, easy dunk. That's exactly how you should handle the double on Vic. That's exactly how you should handle the help defense in the lane. It was perfect, perfect, perfect from everybody, and they got 2 points. And it was a heads-up play by Thad Young to know exactly when to cut. Turner got him the ball. It was Turner's only assist of the game, but it was a really impressive possession. And it just shows what this team can do, and they're clicking and paying attention and all that. Turner, in this one, just okay. Really solid on defense, but playing solid defense against JaVale McGee and Jordan Bell and Zaza Pachulia even for 7 minutes, which I don't think he ever... I think Pachulia's minutes were all against Sabonis in that fourth quarter stretch. But anyway, he was solid on D, but his offensive game wasn't really there. Only 3 of 9, missed 4 threes. But they were all open threes, so they're shots you want him to take. If he makes just half of them, now we're looking at a 14-point game from Turner. So he was fine. He, the shots got to fall for him, of course, but... this is not the team for this is the Warriors are a team where his defense is way more important than his offense, and he was good on defense. That's why he was plus 14, and no foul trouble, which is good for him, because there was foul trouble for another center, Domantas Sabonis, who couldn't keep his hands off of guys in the lane, but he was crashing the boards really hard, finished with 9 of them. He played in the Zaza minutes, and I want to talk about those for 2 reasons. One is because he did a nice job in those minutes, actually. Zaza's really flat-footed. Like, he's a really good player. I think Zaza Pachulia is kind of underrated just because he's far and away the worst starter on his own team. But he's a pretty good player, actually. And I was worried that he was one of the few guys that could actually do a solid job he's one of the few people that I thought could do a solid job playing defense and offense with Sabonis out there. And I was worried that there would be an injury because Zaza has a reputation for being not so nice. I'm trying to say this delicately to not say anything wrong, but yeah, I just was worried about that, but no one got hurt, and Sabonis did a good job holding his own in those minutes, and the rest of the game, he was just okay. He got to the line quite a bit, which is not really Sabonis' big thing, 4 or 5, and he got a flagrant foul on him, which finally, he was getting killed in there all game. But good for him to not get hurt and hang okay in the Pachulia minutes. He was not really good in the rest of the minutes. He was fouling quite a bit. I'll finally do it. Lance Stephenson was good, and I don't hate when Lance is good and I have to talk about it. It's just like, it's kind of like a caricature for me almost to like make fun of Lance when he does bad things. But Lance Stephenson had a 1-turnover game and had 2 huge threes in the first quarter and really kept him in the game when it felt like the Warriors were going to take off in the first quarter. So credit to Lance. I mean, if that Lance shows up in the playoffs, I mean, that's what you need from him, is just to be 100% shooting from three and only turning it over once. Like, that's exactly what you need Lance Stephenson to be in a really important playoff series. And he showed that he can do it against the best competition. So I love that from Lance. Trevor Booker, I want to talk about too, because he continues to be the Trevor Booker that we want him to be when they signed him. 5 rebounds, 3 offensive, 2 of 5 from the field, which isn't great, but you got to like when he's doing exactly what they signed him to do, which is just hit the glass and not be TJ Leaf off the bench. And speaking of TJ Leaf, the Pacers were up by so much that he got to play. TJ Leaf and Joe Young got to play down the stretch. Joe Young actually had 5 points, so it was fun to watch them get out there. TJ Leaf grabbed a rebound but didn't do anything. But all in all, quality performance from literally everyone on the Pacers in this one. Corey Joseph played some great D. He was the fourth quarter guy this game. Nate McMillan seems to always get the right guys out there in those clutch situations. And it was Corey today. So all in all, I mean, like I just said, everyone really did their jobs well. No one on the Warriors just was like getting free and just wreaking havoc at all. It looked like Durant was going to try to take over at the start of the fourth quarter, but they really did a good job shutting him down. I'm not even sure how Bojan was able to not suck guarding Kevin Durant, but he did it, and I was amazed. So all the credits. This Pacers team continues to prove everybody, including me, who watches all of their games, wrong. They beat the Warriors twice. That's it. They're 7-1 is their final record against Golden State, San Antonio, and Cleveland. I mean, that is just unbelievable. Who would have seen that coming? So now they play this, which, okay, backing up to those. Those are historically good teams in the Cavs and the Warriors and the Spurs. But this year's good team, I nailed that transition. The Toronto Raptors, first in the East, and I believe one went away from clinching the top spot in the Eastern Conference, are on the Pacers' schedule tonight, so I want to talk about that game a little bit now. So the Raptors are 56-22, which is crazy. They just smoked the Boston Celtics, which I might have just said something wrong. I think that might have meant they do hold the top spot in the Eastern Conference, no matter what. The Celtics can get to 57. No, not quite. So the Raptors are one win, which could be this Pacers win, away from clinching the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. By the way, I didn't include this in the Warriors part, but I meant to. The Warriors, or the Pacers clinched the top five seed with that win. They cannot get caught by the Heat, Wizards, or Bucks now. So they are angling for home court again, but with a game and a half behind the Sixers, it's going to be tough, but they could do it anyway. So the Raptors, again, probably going to be the number one seed in the conference, and rightfully so. Second best offense in the league this year, seventh best defense in the league. They really have been doing it all. Dwayne Casey's going to end up being, if I had a vote, which I don't, my coach of the year vote. He has just been awesome at everything. He's gotten guys I've never even heard of, like Malcolm Miller. He started against the Pacers last time, if you'll remember. You know, he's getting him involved in playing well in big minutes. And Alphonso McKinney is a guy on their full-time roster who's, he like, he doesn't play that much, but he, you know, he gives them quality minutes when he plays. And their bench has been, as I've talked ad nauseum about on this exact show, the reason they've been so good. You know, they start off with a, first of all, they start off with two All-Stars, with Lowry and DeRozan. And then OG is a great wing defender who can knock down the three when he needs to. And then Serge Ibaka is like the most forgotten good player in the league, like I talked about earlier in the week. And now Valanciunas is shooting 40% from three and hitting the glass really hard like he always does. So their starters are just great and fit really well together. They're up to fourth in field goal percentage, they're seventh in field goal percentage this season. They're fourth in two-point percentage. They're fourth in free throw percentage. They're fourth in total points. They're second in not getting blocked. They're sixth in assists. They just move the ball and take good shots, and they make them, and that's how you win. That's how you play quality basketball. And they stop the other team from making the three and taking the three. I mean, they allow the second least threes in the league. They do all the little statistical and tangible stuff right, and that makes them so hard to beat. But after that starter group comes in and is amazing because they have two All-Stars and quality players around them, then they have Pascal Siakam and Jakob Poeltl off the bench in the post, and those two guys are just like tough. They don't like perfectly remind me of the Detroit Bad Boys, but they just like bang you around and set really hard screens and try really hard on the glass. And Siakam's trying to learn to shoot a three, like he could be a deadly player one day. But those two guys are quality post players and could lead the Raptors to something dangerous in the future. And then Fred VanVleet, probably going to be the second in the Sixth Man of the Year voting coming into the year, has just been amazing. That's also been talked about a ton, but I think it's his second year in the league, and he just has completely turned it around as the backup point guard in Toronto. I mean, he's just been amazing for them, especially defensively. He's slid right into their Corey Joseph role, ironically, from last year. And then C.J. Miles, you all know about C.J. Miles. He's also been awesome, chucking like an absurd amount of threes every time he's on the court. I'm going to do the classic check C.J. Miles three-point attempt rate while I talk about the Raptors thing. 76.4, so over three-quarters of C.J. Miles' shot attempts a season have been a three-pointer. That's just crazy. So this team really just like lets it fly with their bench, and they have a quality fit of guys together, and they're so deep, you know, even behind those guys, Malachi Richardson, Norman Powell, Bebe Noguera, Malcolm Miller I already talked about, you know, they just have guys everywhere who are good players. Daylon Wright I didn't even talk about, like, they have this quality young point guard too. Okay, they have so much good stuff going on that makes them hard to beat, and this is a regular season game, which is important to point out because they're a better regular. I mean, they're going to be good in the playoffs this year. I think they're finally going to be like a quality playoff team. But I think that they're going to be a better regular season team than playoff team again because they are deep on the bench, and that suits a regular season better. And I think that suits the Pacers poorly because on a back-to-back, when you're going against a deep team that can have full energy out there all the time, it's going to be tough. Fred VanVleet has shown against the Pacers he was really good, I think, in their, was it their last home game or their two games ago? I can't remember. But he was really good at scoring off the bench. And then DeRozan is going to try, excuse me, I'm yawning. DeRozan is going to try to really kill Lance because he hates Lance. He just gets in a bad mood every time he has to play against him. So there are a lot of reasons I think this game will be challenging for the Pacers, and I ultimately predict a loss, mostly because of the back-to-back, but it's gonna be just fascinating to see how the Pacers come out in this one after being on such an emotional high from just smoking the defending champion. So we'll have to see how it goes. I think my key matchup, if I knew the Pacers ended up winning, I would say the most likely thing that happened is that Darren Collison outshoots Kyle Lowry percentage-wise. And by a lot. So I'm talking like DC scores 20 points and shoots over 50% from three, and Lowry only scores 16 points and shoots like 20%, because Lowry is just so good. And they used to run these Lowry and the bench units that were amazing, and they still do sometimes, but Van Vliet's kind of made that not as important. But Lowry's just so important to what they do. I mean, I know that DeRozan's been better than him this year, but we've seen how the Pacers handled DeRozan, but Lowry can just be a wild card in any game. And if he's struggling, the Pacers can have a chance to, you know, grab some more rebounds and run in transition. And DC hitting his shots has always been, obviously hitting shots is the key to winning. So that sounds like the dumbest thing ever. But, I mean, they kind of go where he and Bojan go when Vic's off. So I think that could be one of them. And the other one would be how Turner does against Valanciunas on the glass, which is scary. But Turner's going to spread him out. And Turner's not going to be the offensive rebound guy. I need to, like, burn this into the heads of people, because Turner's not going to get offensive rebounds. He stands, like, 17, 20 feet from the basket on offense. Like, he's not in position for him. It's not his fault. But anyway, the defensive rebound battle between Valanciunas, Turner's defensive rebounds, Valanciunas' offensive rebounds. If Turner can do a good job of limiting him on the glass and they get as few possessions as possible, that's the other thing that I think the Pacers can do well to win. The bench is just going to be crucial, but I think they can break even. They've been playing really well recently. As long as they don't go the all-bench group, Nate, please don't go the all-bench group. But I think it'll be fascinating, and I really think the difference is going to end up being that it's just a back-to-back on the road. I mean, those games are just so hard to win. So I'll predict a Toronto probably 8 to 10 point win. They wrap up their one seed, then they can rest their guys the rest of the year. The Pacers, if they lose, I think, I don't know about that. That would be their 33rd loss. Never mind. They would still not have clinched to the 5 seed, but it would be if the Sixers play the Cavs tonight. I talk about that for a second, you know, too. But yeah, that'd be the 33rd loss for the Pacers. So if the Sixers ended up winning against the Cavs, I believe that would mean the Pacers are all but locked into the 5 seed. One more win by either the Cavs or Sixers, or one more loss by the Pacers would do that. So that game's pretty huge. Watch that one, because the winner is likely who the Pacers will play in their, or the loser of that game is likely who the Pacers will play in their first round series. So if you don't want to play LeBron, root for the Sixers. Excuse me. Oh, my gosh. I'm all over the place. The winner of that game will not play the Pacers. So if you don't want to play LeBron James in the first round of the playoffs, root for the Cavs to beat the Sixers tonight so the Pacers can play the Sixers. Okay. I got it right that time after making, like, six errors in my last couple of sentences. But, yeah, that's all I wanted to talk about. Dominant win over the Warriors. I think it's going to be tough tonight against Toronto, and that Cavs-Sixers game is something to watch. Be on the lookout for my preview of a potential Cavaliers series on 8.9 seconds today. We're finishing up our playoff preview series, and we nailed it. We were right about the five teams that we thought they could play. They officially can't play the Raptors, and they officially can't play the Bucks. So, we got it. We got pretty lucky with the Celtics timing, and the Heat one was interesting, too, which is still on the table. They can still play the Heat or the Wizards, so should be fascinating down the stretch. But thank you guys for listening. Have a great weekend and Friday. We will come back Monday probably to talk about both the Hornets and the Raptors game. But with all this playoff timing coming up and all these storylines happening, we also want to talk about the Kyrie injury at some point. We're going to have a lot to talk about come Monday. It's going to be me and Adam most likely. That might be Tuesday because there's a game Sunday. We'll see. But anyway, thank you guys for listening and have a great weekend.